Okay, I'd like to thank Michael Rainsborough for coming along as a guest speaker. He's going to speak on the topic of neoliberalism today. Today's meeting is organised by the Anarchist Commons Discussion Group, which is set up by the Belfast branch of WSM. We aim to create a debate and discussion amongst the anarchist movement, wider libertarian movement, and also to discuss maybe contemporary issues and revolutionary history, to basically to propagandise anarchist ideas. So I'll let Michael fire away here for this brief discussion.
So starting in late 2007, people could start to see the cracks in the economic system, and that came full apart to everyone's view last year in 2008. And there's been a big discussion of like, what is the economic crisis, and now that people have come together with what they feel is some kind of solution, for example, the world leaders in the recent G20 summit in London, then, you know, what is being done about it? So just a little, you know, first example, I was going to say, you know, one way to look at this crisis is that it is a crisis in overproduction. An overproduction crisis is pretty simply when capitalism, you know, creates, you know, so much capital of production that it produces more than can be sold. So if you produce something, then people have to buy it. And that means workers have to have wages to buy it. And so if you see the economic crisis has been worse in the US, Britain, Ireland, Europe, and since the 1970s, there hasn't been any real increase in wages in these countries. Where in China, there have been wage struggles in the last 10 years. And so China has had a possibility of the crisis hasn't been as bad for them. Normally, if you produce something, you know, then you sell it to your own people. What we've seen here is largely that the United States has shifted away without a lot of wages to buy the things. We're seeing the products built in other countries, actual industrial jobs, are shifted away from Western countries. Whereas you see the purchasing happens in Western countries, but we haven't had increases in wages. So how has this been managed? And one of the ways that this has been done is that profit has been shifted to you know, to the financial sector, to the people who loan money out in the Western world. And workers in the Western world have been given huge amounts of credit. And largely, whereas, you know, it's Western, and, you know, it's Irish banks and British banks that give Irish and British people credit, the credit that comes for those banks in the overall economy, a lot of that is being propped up by the Chinese being able to loan money to them. There's a number of things that have, you know, led to this crisis. You know, one is the failure of free trade and the globalization restructuring. The free trade ideology says that all countries have to participate without, you know, creating tax barriers and tariffs, and there's been a lot of disagreement amongst countries, like the World Trade Organization was set up to do that, and to create a perfectly free market for rich people to do their trading. That hasn't happened. There's failure to restructure the oil, energy, and industry. So things like the Iraq War, capitalism depends on an increasing supply of oil, so they want to be able to control the energy production. The inability to control wage struggle, particularly in China. In developing worlds, there's been a rise. Developing countries, there's been a rise of land reclamation movements, resource reclamation movements. People here obviously are familiar with the WSM has been involved in the stopping the appropriation of water here in Belfast as well as in Dublin a few years back. Interesting thing is the financialization of class struggle through expanding use of credit. So people basically supplemented their loss of wages by borrowing. And part of that was, particularly middle class people were able to put their, if you owned a house, your house was going up and up in value, so you could borrow new things on that. Now that, of course, created a lot of problems when the housing market collapsed. Inclusion of blacks, recent immigrants, women into ownership society, this has undermined class hierarchy. So these are a lot of things that also helped kick off the economic crisis. The response to an overproduction crisis, there's a couple responses. One, obviously, would be to find another system other than capitalism. A really good example would be socialism, libertarian socialism. This requires large-scale structural change in the economy. It requires a pretty fighting movement to do that. Obviously, another possible shift in a regulation crisis or overproduction crisis, the rules are up for grabs. So who rewrites the rules can be anyone. And that has also can lead to an increase in fascism, where people with that ideology move to take control of the system. The typical responses within capitalism are Keynesianism has been one response, and so this is more commonly known as in America, Roosevelt in the 1930s came out with the New Deal. And this is to spend huge amounts of public works programs, so state-sponsored money, with your fiscal policy. So fiscal policy is the is how you spend money and how you tax things, as opposed to monetarist policy, which is how you control the money supply, how you regulate loans, how much money is out in circulation. So using fiscal policy, you create huge public works programs, and this creates jobs, and it increases economic demand. And this is was the Keynesian idea of how to overcome an overproduction crisis. What that requires is a strong working class movement, and that's one of the things that is missing, say, in claims by a lot of the environmental movement is saying, oh, we want a Green New Deal. So they're arguing for a Keynesian response to the overproduction crisis. And as part of that restructuring, it would be restructuring towards environmentally friendly work and an environmentally friendly economy. The reason the New Deal happened was because there was a huge row. The New Deal was a deal that was cut between Roosevelt and the top of the trade union movement to prevent the bottom of the trade union movement from taking over the country and replacing American capitalism with American socialism. And that happened likewise in other countries who followed suit after the fact of the United States pushing that issue. The other response to the overproduction crisis in the 30s that the people who didn't, like a lot of the ruling class hated Roosevelt. They thought he was a class traitor. And Roosevelt, of course, was amongst the elites. The other response was to destroy excess capital and start again. That basically means, well, we've overproduced capital, there's too much stuff, so just let these factories go to waste, do that, and then we just start again. And so that's massive loss of jobs for people. And employers restructure to benefit themselves. And that's really what you get when you don't have a really strong fighting working class movements. So this phrase that we're recently hearing, what does green shoots of the recovery mean? And I think the first way to think about this is there's always, when people talk about the economy on television, it's always very confusing because there's really two economies. There's an economy for the wealthy, for the rich, the people who employ, for bankers, and there's an economy for the rest of us. And the green shoots of the recovery probably means two different things for different people. Some of the bankers and the employers are saying, oh, look, I can maybe see our way out of this. That's what they're saying. And they think if they have, you know, if they do a lot of job losses and do a lot of economic restructuring, then they might be okay. For working class people, this means massive layoffs and restructuring. I think that's what we're going to see later this summer. The sort of the G20 solution was to bring a bunch of these countries together and negotiate some immediate state capitalism. So look, we're going to bail out the banks, we're going to prop up the economy, so because the free market just hasn't worked, and we'll have to do some reorganization of that. But what they wanted to make sure, what Gordon Brown worked to do in the G20, what the other people who were involved in that worked to do, was to make sure that the different countries who were doing measures to save their own economy didn't cancel each other out. So they wanted to keep a global economy in, together. And be able to sort of resuscitate the economy for themselves. So this state capitalism is deliberately seen as a temporary solution. And really the thing is, when you say, it is state capitalism rather than nationalization of the banks, because the banks are being effectively nationalized, as in the government has put the money into it, so people's tax dollars have been put into that to controlling the banks. You know, but the policy is not in benefit of the taxpayer. The policy is not in benefit of the consumer or the working person. The policies are simply to hold the banking structure together and then restart it. And so people, you know, quite deliberately, the people in the Western and the Northern countries do not see the wealthy countries, do not see this state capitalism as a permanent measure. For them, it's a temporary solution. Let's just get this restarted, get the economy back going. Some countries in the global south are more likely to see this, you know, more state control, more state investment, more organized, and in some countries, organized for the benefit of working people, slightly more certainly than it has been here. They're seeing that, you know, they're not seeing it as temporary. That makes people in the bankers and political scientists of the elites nervous, and you can see that in some of their writings. Neoliberalism sees crisis, or capitalism sees crisis as an opportunity. So this is a crisis opportunity, and how they're responding to it. So what they're doing is reorganizing relations between finance, capital, and the rest of the system. So you know, if Western countries or bankers in London sort of said, okay, we control the capital, and we're going to have the value come to our countries, even if the, you know, industrial capitalist is often, you know, in the investments or somewhere else. Those types of arrangements in terms of how, you know, whether finance capitalism is the most important thing, and unregulated finance capitalism is the most important thing, those may change. There's certainly a lot of talk about regulating, again, the economy. They're also going to looking to discipline working class borrowers. So they're pretty upset about this whole fact that so many people were managed to you know, borrow so much that the economy became banjaxed. It's being used as a justification for environmental plunder, wage reductions, and new land expropriations in the developing world. So the International Monetary Fund is being trotted out again to loan countries money that are falling apart, and it'll be structural adjustment programs where they say, look, in the past, structural adjustment programs, great, you owe us money, we'll loan you money to keep going, but you have to cut all your funding for education, you have to cut funding for food sovereignty, and you have to open up your markets to Western countries, and you have to make sure your investments are, for example, cash crops. You don't grow food that you can use yourself. You want to grow cotton that we can sell to Western countries, or you want to open up your mining systems for that. So that's, you know, so for the capitalism, this crisis is an opportunity, particularly if they can see that sort of green shoots of the recovery. That's them in there to jam in. And we see this here in Belfast. The Fordistian struggle is a perfect example of that. That struggle was in the works for the cancelling those workers' jobs was in the works for years. And then when the economic crisis, they trotted it out and said, look, and it was justification. Ford was making money They shifted their accounts around so the money was being made somewhere else, and it looked like the factory here was financially unsuccessful. But what was really financially unsuccessful for them is they wanted to cut wages, and they couldn't do that because the working class in Belfast would fight against that. And another probably response that we're going to see, and that's really where I think a lot of the G20 solution organized the state responses, so their responses to the crisis didn't cancel each other out. And the next thing that we'll probably see in terms of a big global meeting of world leaders is going to be the renegotiation of the Kyoto Treaty in December 2009. And we'll see a green capitalism rhetoric. You know, we can save the economy and be good for jobs, and here's what we have to do to do that. So a lot of what's on the table for the renegotiation of the Kyoto Treaty has less to do with cutting carbon out of the atmosphere, and a lot more to do with controlling the world's energy supply for the purposes of capitalism, for the purposes of making sure capitalism needs an ever expanding energy supply, and capitalism does not want to pay for the environmental costs of economic production and economic profit. So they don't want the idea of of production, increased production causing increased carbon production, and that being a cost that everyone pays for, but capitalism causes and benefits from. That's something that they don't want to deal with on the table. And the restructuring that they'd like to see come out of that is basically a lot more neoliberalism, free market solutions for an economy, free market solutions for carbon markets. So free market hasn't worked for the economy in general, so why would it solve an environmental crisis? Thanks very much.
Does anyone have any comments, questions, ideas, fire away, whatever you see? My question firstly, I'm a bit confused about what neoliberalism is. Is it just capitalism under a different face? Is it just a various faces of capitalism which we've experienced over the last 30 years, from Reaganism to fascism to neoliberalism? What exactly is the phenomenon of neoliberalism, and do you think it's dead as such?
I certainly don't think neoliberalism is dead. I think it's in crisis and it wants to simply come back, reproduce itself. If it can stabilize this crisis, it will go right back to the same process. And then we'll see another crisis in 10 years, which will be much larger than this. And that's if they can stabilize right now. I think neoliberalism is sort of starting in the sort of the 1970s response to working class struggles they couldn't control the oil industry. Both developing world nations said, no, we're not going to give our oil away at the price you want it. And there's also huge amounts of working class resistance in the 70s, in the late 60s and the 70s, that people refused to work in the system. At that time, people would call what the system had, the economic arrangement of the economy, as a Fordist economy. And Fordism simply means that you gain competitive advantage in building a product. So if you get competitive advantage, that means you're going to build your product and you can sell it cheaper than someone else. So it's competitive in the pricing market, more competitive than other people's. Your product can be sold, other people's can't. And that competitive advantage is gained by some means. The competitive advantage in Fordism is that people put all of their production in the same location. So the 50s is like the huge automobile industry, mm-hmm. where they brought all the rubber together to build the tires. They brought all the manufacturing in the same place. And this was originally pioneered by Henry Ford, who built a car plant that did all this. So the 50s was the